through a series of approaches that will ultimately leave us with the Bayesian particle filter. But to get there, we have to talk about a few intermediate techniques. So the particle filter approach, let's first talk about Bayesian methods. So the particle filter approach estimates a sequence of hidden parameters, which we will denote as a vector capital X sub T for T is equal to zero to capital N, based only on the observed data, which we will call Ys. So Ys are what we measure, and Xs are what we try to estimate. And this could be a problem in speech recognition, where we're measuring the waveform and we're trying to estimate the underlying sounds that were in that waveform. Or this could be any kind of pattern recognition application where Ys represent the data that you're measuring and Xs represent the underlying information that you're trying to get at, such as the class assignments or things like that. And you can do this in a hidden, typically in a hidden way that is very similar to the way the other hidden state modeling techniques that we've talked about work. So all Bayesian estimates of X follow the posterior distribution. So we can write that, we can write a posterior, the probability of X sub T, a particular hidden state, given these measurements, given all of these measurements, Y, can be written as a probability of X sub T given just Y0 through Yn, since this vector Y is just the composition of these measurements. In contrast to this approach, the Markov chain Monte Carlo technique, or what's known as important sampling, or what's often called the important sampling approach, attempts to model the full posterior, all of the observations given hidden states given all of the observations. So we can write that as a joint probability of X0 through Xn given Y0s through Yn. Now we recall with Bayes' rule, we can decompose these conditional probabilities. We can write that P of X sub T given Y sub T is equal to the probability of Y sub T given X sub T times the probability of X sub T divided by the probability of Y sub T. Further, we often model the hidden state sequence, that is, the sequence of X's, as a Markovian process. So we can write this posterior, X of T given Y sub T, is equal to that same posterior at time t minus 1 times a weight from a weight that lets you transition from the time t to t minus 1, from time t minus 1 to time t. So we call that W of t given t minus 1, where this weight is defined by the probability of y of t given x of t times the probability of x of t given x of t minus 1 divided by the probability of Y of T given Y of T minus 1. So that's just a way of expressing a relationship between the posterior at time T minus 1 and the posterior at time T in terms of a weight, a transition probability, if you will. To compute the posterior at time T, therefore, we only need to know the posterior at time T minus 1 and the corresponding weight. And therefore, this gives us an iterative method for estimating the posteriors. And there's a whole class or whole family of techniques that use this kind of approach, some originally dating back to concepts such as Kalman filtering. And you'll see in a moment that particle filtering and things like this are deeply rooted in these kinds of sequential filtering type approaches. Of course, to estimate this weight, we need to know the distribution in closed form and compute complex integrals or sums, and we never really know those things, so we can't really do much in terms of closed form solutions. But what we will end up with particle filtering is a sort of an experimental technique or a data-driven technique for estimating these probabilities. A more useful solution involves estimation of the marginal posterior distribution. then that's defined as the probability of x of t given y of t. So x of t is the hidden state and y of t are the measurements. And that we can write as the probability of y of t given x of t times the probability of x of t given y of t minus 1 divided by the probability of y of t given y of t minus 1. And this we'll write as w sub u of t and t minus 1 times p of x of t, y of t minus 1. So we'll just take these two terms, the y of t, p of y of t given x of t divided by p of y of t given y of t minus 1, and we'll call that a weight vector w sub u. So this defines a sequential Bayesian processor that involves having some initial guess for this probability at time 0 given y0, and then computing we can compute the probability of x of t given y of t minus 1 as the integral of the probability of x of t minus 1 times the probability of x of t minus 1 given y of t minus 1 times the derivative of x of t minus 1. And then we can update the posterior. We can compute x of t, the probability of x of t given y of t minus 1 as the probability of y of t given x of t times the probability of x of t given y of t minus 1, which we computed up here, divided by y of t given y of t minus 1. So I don't want to go into this in too much detail, but this is a sequential Bayesian approach to estimating the weights and the posteriors. But it's sort of along the lines of what we talked about with Bayesian incremental learning, that this is now something which is iterative in time instead of iterative across samples. So if you have a time series, for example, and you want to continually evolve your estimates of the time series, you can run this recursion in time as each new data point comes in, and you can watch your estimates of the model then get better and better with more data, assuming, of course, that the statistics of the process are constant over time, which we call Y-sense stationary. And so this works well for approaches where the signal's not time-varying, but for a signal like audio, which is time-varying, this maybe isn't the best approach. So again, today we're going to sort of step through a number of techniques to end up with what are called particle filters. So the first thing we've done thus far, then, is introduce this notion of sequential Bayesian estimation, and that's sort of summarized in this algorithm. Now, Monte Carlo methods, we talked a little bit about last time. These were historically motivated by games of chance, and they actually played an instrumental role in the Manhattan Project. If you've ever studied if you ever have a chance to study the history of the Manhattan Project, it's pretty interesting that during World War II in the early 1940s, and they were trying to design this nuclear weapon, and the physicists actually had, they had sort of a good handle, you could say, on the theory. They had equations, models, and such, but they didn't have computers. So they didn't have a lot of computational power to actually do the design and optimizations and things. So they used Monte Carlo methods as ways of finding numerical solutions to these equations. And so that was one of the first major successes for this approach. Monte Carlo techniques are based on the concept that through random sampling, the resulting empirical distributions will converge to the desired distribution. And we'll see in a moment, it's not unlike simply estimating the mean of a process by collecting a lot of data from that process and computing the empirical mean. But Monte Carlo methods have evolved as essentially an empirical approach to estimating the statistics of a process that actually use samples of the process in your estimation. And we'll see a couple examples of that shortly. Monte, Markov chain Monte Carlo techniques are based on sampling from probability distributions based on a Markov chain. So with a particular form of Monte Carlo technique we're going to focus on today is known as a Markov chain Monte Carlo technique. And that's simply because we're going to try to evolve the estimates based on an estimate at a previous timestamp times some probability, some weight. And that's just it's a simplification that is useful because it lends itself to these kinds of iterative algorithms that we're interested in. So as an example of this, let's consider some function f of x, which is it's with respect to some underlying distribution p of x. So we have some random variable x that goes through some process f of x, and that random variable obeys some underlying probability distribution p of x. So if I asked you to compute the expectation of the output of f of x, you would simply take the expectation of f of x and you would write that as the function f of x times the probability p of x d of x. And you'd integrate that over x and you'd get the expectation. Now, if you think about the implications of this, this is giving you an expectation of a transformation of a random variable, and you can see that it's very clear that in performing that expectation, rather than just uniformly summing up the variables, we're weighting them by the probability of by the probability of occurrence of each value of x, right? So if all values of x were equally probable, this would be 1, and we would just have the integral of f of x dx. But because we're interested in Bayesian-like techniques where we take into account the prior probabilities of the data, the expectation is based on the probability of the data itself. Now, to do this, though, we need a lot of knowledge about the process. We need to know what the functional form of f of x. So, of course, in practice, if I asked you to compute the expectation of the output of f of x, what you would probably do is just go and collect a set of random samples and compute the mean empirically as the sample mean of that data. And in a moment, we're going to show that that's a good thing to do. And we've also talked about the fact that if you simply, if you think about when you compute the mean from a set of random samples, what's implied in that calculation? So, for example, if I tell you here, this is, if I give you this discrete random variable, and I tell you that it can take on one of four values, 1, 2, 3, or 4, and I want you to compute the mean of that random variable. Well, with absolutely no knowledge about the process, you would probably tell me that 2.5 is the mean of that variable because that's the mean of, if you add up 1, 2, 3, and 4, you get 2.5. But knowing what we know now about statistics, what you really would want to know is how probable each one of those discrete values are, and then you'd want to weight the mean by that calculation, right? So the interesting thing that people don't often appreciate when they draw a set of random samples is this is not a uniformly, what you're actually doing in that process is you're sampling the probability distribution. Because if one, for example, is more probable than all the others, the more samples you draw, the more times you're going to get samples from one. So the sample set that you have actually reflects the probability distribution of the data. And that's essentially fundamentally what a Monte Carlo method is all about. It builds on the observation that when you draw random samples from the process, those samples obey the same statistics as the underlying process, and therefore you should be able to use those samples to estimate the statistics of the underlying process. So in doing this kind of a thing, what we'll do is we will take essentially a sum of random variables, a sum of samples, and you can actually write that as delta functions of x minus x of I, where x of I are the samples, because this delta function will only be non-zero when x is equal to x of I. So this is just a nice way of mathematically expressing the fact that you're going to sum up these samples. So if we substitute this into our expression for the expectation, it's easy to show that f of x times p of x, where p of x is the sum of delta functions, it's easy to show that that just gives you the sum over n of f of x of I, which is just the sample mean f. So this is this process of estimating the expectation, this is just referred to as the Monte Carlo estimate of e sub x of f of x. Now, again, this is one of these things. You knew how to do this before, but this is just intended to show you why what you're doing makes sense. That sampling, if you have a transformation of a random variable and you're going to compute the expectation of that transformed random variable, it's perfectly reasonable to just collect the number of samples of that random variable and compute a sample mean. That's statistically well-founded approach. So that if you think about this for a bit, the logical extension of this then becomes something known as important sampling. And important sampling is a concept that's sort of emerged in the last 15, 20 years in statistics. A generalization of the Monte Carlo approach is important sampling. We can express the integral that we previously showed as, we can express this integral of p of x d of x as the integral of p of x over q of x times q of x dx, just a fancy way to rewrite that, under the constraint that the integral of q of x is equal to 1. Q of x is referred to as the important sampling distribution since it samples the target distribution p of x non-uniformly, giving more importance to some values of p of x. So q of x can be approximated by drawing n samples, and we can write q of x then as a sum of these delta functions like we did before. And then we can approximate this integral. We have the integral of these sums of delta functions. We can approximate this as the sum of p of x of I over q of x of I. That just comes from plugging this into here and observing that the delta functions are only non-zero when x is equal to x of I. The art in important sampling, then, is to carefully choose the importance distribution q of x, which approximates p of x. This is the principal factor of affecting performance. And we can use important sampling to approximate the posterior we calculate in Bayesian estimation. So this we won't go into this in great detail, but important sampling is just a way of applying a weighting function to your samples in a hope that you can then use that weighting function to better estimate your underlying distribution. Now, in the limit, when you have infinite amounts of data, of course, you will get your estimate of your original distribution. But what we're interested in from a statistical point of view is when we have a finite number of samples, are there ways we can weight those samples differently than uniform weighting to get a better estimate of the underlying distribution? Now, this is a little bit subtle, and I don't really do justice to this topic here, but I just wanted to introduce it because you'll see this concept used in our later work on particle filtering. But the main point I wanted to make here was that when you have infinite amounts of data, you don't really have to worry about anything. The data accurately reflects the statistics of your process. The problem we constantly face in signal processing or pattern recognition is, what do you do when you have finite amounts of data? Is there a way you can manipulate that data to get a better estimate of the underlying statistics of the system you're trying to understand? Now, later we'll see how we can use this concept as part of a particle filter. But for the moment, we're just introducing this weighting function. So we can now estimate the mean of f of x, which we'll call f hat of t. It's still going to be the expectation of f of x, but now we're going to introduce this important sampling function. So we can write the integral of f of x. We have p of x of t given y of t divided by q of x of t given y of t times q of x of t given y of t dx. So again, you say, well, this doesn't seem profound because these two cancel each other. But a better way to think about this is that this might be your best guess at what the underlying distribution is. This might be your true underlying distribution. And you're trying then to weight these samples by something so that everything sort of washes out and you're left with a reasonable estimate of the underlying distribution. So we can apply Bayes' rule to the posterior and define a weighting function. So again, we're going to take this p over q, and we're going to define this as a weighting function. And we can apply Bayes' rule to this and write this as, instead of p of x sub t given y of t, we can write this as p of y sub t given x of t times p of x sub t. And then we can divide by p of y of t and then carry the q over. So we can begin to think about this term as a weighting function. And then our job with the particle filters are going to be, given the data, we're going to try to estimate this weighting function so that we can then do a better job of estimating the underlying mean. Unfortunately, this weight estimate requires estimate knowledge of the evidence, which we don't often have, because that requires averaging over all possible conditions. And this evidence, y of t, can be written as the integral of p of y of t given x of t integrated over x of t. So you can write it as a conditional probability and then integrate out x. But nevertheless, we can combine this to produce an estimate of the mean in terms of this expression. So we can write that the estimate of the mean, we have f of x of t. We then have this weighting function, w of t, and then we have q of x of t given y of t. So we can write this estimate in terms of this w, and then we can pull the evidence, y of t, outside of the integral. We can also then define a new weighting function, this w times this q. We can just lump those together and we can take this w and this q, and we can write that in terms of this p of y of t, x of t, given p of x of t. So this can be used to estimate the evidence, allowing us to simplify our estimate for the mean. So now we can write that this f hat of t is going to be an integral of the weight times f of x times q of x of t given y of t dx divided by the integral of w of t, q of x of t given y of t dx of t. And therefore, and we can write that this numerator can be viewed as a expectation of w of t and f of x of t with respect to this distribution q, and the denominator can be written as an expectation of w of t, again with respect to the same marginal q, or conditional rather, q. So drawing samples from this q And applying Monte Carlo techniques, we can derive a new expression for the mean. So what we've done to this point is work this into a situation where if this Q represents our model of the process and we draw estimates from that process, then we can estimate the mean as the ratio of these two quantities. Now, again, you may not fully appreciate the significance of this, but this is essentially a way to take into account the fact that with the finite number of samples, we can weight those samples in a way that will give us will hopefully give us a better estimate of the true mean of the data. So let's write this Q. This is X of T given Y of T. Again, we're going to write this as a sum of delta functions. And we can substitute this into our expression for the mean and obtain that the mean F hat of T, our estimate of the mean, is 1 over N times the sum of a weight function times F of X sub T of I, where this weight function is WI of T over the sum of WI of T. So this is just now writing this in terms of these F of X's. These are essentially the transformation of the hidden variables. And these weights then, this is just a ratio essentially of the weights WI of T over the sum of all available weights. As the number of samples goes to infinity, this converges to an estimate of the posterior that is in terms of these weights times these delta functions, which is significant because it defines the estimate of the posterior in terms of the values of the hidden states. So what we're trying to do here is to estimate ultimately we want to estimate the posterior, and we've now got that in terms of an expression involving the hidden states and an expression involving some weights, and these weights we're going to ultimately be able to determine these empirically. So we can then modify this to obtain a sequential estimate of the posterior. We can write that using our Markovian assumption that Q of X of T given Y of T is equal to Q of X of T and X of T minus 1 given Y of T. And this in turn we can write as Q of X of T minus 1 given Y of T minus 1 times Q of X of T given X of T minus 1 and Y of T. Just basing that on essentially a Markovian type assumption where we've got the current value is related to the previous value times the weight. And if we ignore the evidence, the P of Y, then we can actually write that this posterior, P of X of T given Y of T, is proportional to P of Y of T given X of T times P of X of T given X of T minus 1 times P, the posterior, X of T minus 1 given Y of T minus 1. So this is significant because this defines the posterior, which is the hidden states in terms of the measurements at time T, as a function of or being proportional to the posterior times T minus 1 times this expression. And that expression then essentially becomes, we can write then an expression for W of T in terms of the probability of Y of T given X of T times the probability of X of T given X of T minus 1 times our posterior at X of T at T minus 1 divided by Q of X of T given x of t minus 1 and y of t minus 1 times q of x of t minus 1 given y of t minus 1. So this is a way now of writing the weights in terms of the posterior at time t minus 1, our estimate of the posterior at time t minus 1, and then times the probability of transitioning probability of x of t given x of t minus 1. Okay, so don't worry too much about this equation, but we can rearrange these terms to write that w of t can be written in terms of w of t minus 1 times the probability of y of t given x of t, the probability of x of t given x of t minus 1, divided by q of x of t given x of t minus 1 and y of t. So putting all these things together, we can describe a formal procedure for this process. We draw samples from the proposed importance distribution. So let me sort of, I realize that there's a lot of this isn't clear, but let's just sort of focus on what's implied by this. So P is the underlying process. I give you some data, and I tell you this was generated from some underlying process. You don't really know what P is, right? It's the true distribution, you could say. Q is ultimately going to represent your estimate of the true distribution. Now, in reality, Q and P are going to be different by some amount, right? And if you estimate, and therefore, you would like to know something about, you'd like to sort of factor into, you would like to factor into your calculations the difference between P and Q. So in problems where, so think about it this way, maybe is a better way to think about it. I give you some data, and I tell you this is from some underlying process, which I don't really know what it was. But I want you to build a pattern recognition machine on that data. And you'll come back and you'll tell me, well, there's not enough data there for me to build my pattern recognition machine. Okay? We talked about this last class. And I'll say, well, tough luck. Build me a pattern recognition machine. So what can you do? Well, what Monte Carlo methods are all about is let's go ahead and develop some model of the data and then use that model to generate more data. So you take this, so as you all are so quick to do, if I gave this problem to you on an exam, what would you do? The first thing you do is compute a mean, right? Like you did on the first problem. Why are you computing a mean? It's not a bad thing to do. You just need to be sure of why are you computing that mean. You compute the mean, you compute the variance, and you start generating numbers according to a Gaussian distribution. Very reasonable thing to do. You're assuming the data was Gaussian. You're trying to fit a Gaussian to the data as best you can, and then use that Gaussian to generate new data. So the P is the Gaussian. The P is the true underlying distribution, which we don't know. The Q is the Gaussian. So what this algorithm is trying to express is the idea that now because we have Q, we can use that to generate data. We can then use that data to estimate the model. We can then calculate weights of the new model from that data. And then we can use those weights and the data that you actually drew to estimate the underlying distribution. So the difference between what this is and what you're used to thinking about is this is an estimate of the distribution based on those additional samples you drew from your model of the process. So the key point here is that the posterior is being estimated from the samples, and knowledge of our model is wrapped up in these weights. And where have we seen this type of approximation before? Where have we seen in this class an approximation where we estimated a probability distribution directly from a set of samples from that probability distribution? So, close. Good. So we talked at one point in the course, which was I know seems a while ago, but we talked about non-parametric methods for estimating probability distributions. And one of the principal techniques that we introduced was the Tarzan window. And we wrote a very similar expression where we wrote an expression for the probability distribution in terms of the actual samples that you drew, sort of a convolution of those samples with a weighting function. And we show that the more samples you drew, the better, the closer the distribution got. So this is just a more general, in my view, a more generalized version of what we did with the Tarzan window approach. It's a little bit hard to see because the math is very abstract and a little bit tedious. And I really just want in this lecture to give you a flavor for what particle filters are about. So don't worry if you don't understand the details of the math. There is a paper on the main page that has a lot of the details in it if you want to study this further. Now, let's take a next step and let's introduce what we'll end up introducing our notions of common filtering, but to do that, we're going to have to introduce state-space concepts. And I don't know if you've seen state-space before, but if you haven't, don't worry about it too much. We won't go too far into this, but let's now talk about the Bayesian approach to state-space estimation. So Bayesian estimation relative to state-space models is based on extracting the observed or hidden dynamic internal variables from noisy measurements. State variables, it's kind of funny that I'm talking about this today because in my signals and systems class today I'm going to begin my lectures on state variables. Now, I don't know if you saw state variables in your signals and systems class, but state variables are it's a very important way of modeling linear or nonlinear systems in terms of writing an expression for the output that you observe in terms of internal variables, hidden variables, if you will. So, for example, when you're doing circuit analysis, state variables would be things like voltages across capacitors, currents through inductors, and then you're writing the output voltages that you observe in terms of those. And there you can think of the inductors and capacitors as the internal states of the system because they have memory, because they store energy. So what we'll actually invoke here is a state-space model. So the Markovian state vector with initial distribution P of x of 0 propagates temporally through the state space according to the probability of x of t given x of t minus 1. State-space, discrete-time state-space models are nice because you have things at time t. Well, state-space models are nice because you have things at time t in terms of things at time t minus 1. Sometimes with continuous systems, these are written in terms of derivatives. With discrete-time systems, they're written in terms of discrete-time equations. This is sort of a hybrid of the two where we're relating, it's really a discrete time model where we're relating things at time t in terms of things at time t minus 1. Time differences in discrete space are equivalent to derivatives in continuous space. So the conditionally independent measurements evolve from p of y of t given x of t. So if you have x of t, then you can compute y of t's. And you've got some distribution that governs that behavior. The dynamic state variable at time t is obtained from the previous state. So x of t's are going to be a function of x of t minus 1 and the transition probabilities, which we're going to need to estimate. Once propagated, the dynamic state variable is used to update or correct based on the likelihood or the new measurement y of t. So we can sort of summarize this as saying that we're going to have P of X of T given X of T minus 1 And then we're going to have P of Y of T given X of T. And this, and within that framework, we're going to have a state-space formulation which says that X of T is equal to some function A, which is a function of X of T minus 1, U of T minus 1, and W of T minus 1. X are the hidden states, U is the input, which we typically don't have access to, and W are the weights. And then similarly, Y of T, the output, that's what we observe, is some function C, and that function C is a function of X of T, U of T, the input, and V of T. And in sort of classical state-space formulation, the W's and the V's are considered to be noise. They're sort of our they're places in the system where noise, where we can encounter noise. And then this A is the nonlinear dynamic state transition function, and C is the corresponding measurement function. A represents, you could think in terms of transition probabilities because it's representing behavior of the internal states. C represents output probabilities because it's representing what happens at each state, the mapping between states and outputs. So we can then sort of cast this state-space formulation in terms of our Bayesian approach by writing, by letting this probability of X of T given X of T minus 1 represent A, be represented by A of X of T given X of T minus 1, and then similarly letting this C be associated with the output probability, output conditional probability. So to generate the model-based version of the sequential Bayesian processor, we replace the transition and likelihood functions with conditionals, and we seek then to estimate the posterior. We want to estimate X of T given Y of T minus 1. Y's are our measurements, X's are the internal states. So if we can estimate X given our previous measurements, then we can estimate our new measurements based on those hidden states. And that can be written as the integral of A of X of T given X of T minus 1 times P of X of T minus 1 given Y of T minus 1 times D of X of T minus 1. This equation represents a the integral type solution to a state space equation. And again, if you haven't seen state-space variables, don't worry about this too much, but it's possible to take the state-space equations and write a solution for them. Since they essentially involve differences or derivatives, you can write a solution in terms of integrals or summations. So we can incorporate the model-based likelihood into the posterior equation, and we can write that the probability of X of T given Y of T is equal to the output function C of Y of T given X of T times our posterior X of T given Y of T minus 1 divided by the evidence P of Y of T given Y of T minus 1. That's essentially a Bayesian-like formulation. And because of this, then, we can integrate notions of Bayesian estimation into the state-space formulation because we have this now essentially in terms of a likelihood in terms of some evidence and this output equation for Y of T as a function of X of T. And a very common solution to these state space type problems is an algorithm known as common filtering, which attempts to solve the, which allows you to estimate the parameters of a state space model iteratively in time. So, trying to sort of put all this together, we can now combine notions of important sampling, notions of Bayesian estimation, and notions of common filtering. We can put all those together and we get essentially a particle filter. And more precisely, we get a Bayesian particle filter. So, particle filtering is a sequential Monte Carlo method that employs or involves the sequential estimation of probability distributions using the concepts that we just described. The key idea is to represent the required posterior distribution by a set of n random samples, the particles, and the associated weights. So the particles are essentially going to be your function. The samples are going to give you the location of those functions, and the weights are going to tell you how heavily to weight those functions. And then you're essentially going to create an estimate of your posterior distribution as a weighting of those samples. So what we're showing here is essentially an estimate of a posterior in terms of these sample points and the weights associated with those sample points. And then the question becomes, how do we estimate the weights of that? So the samples is something we get because we draw those samples from the process. So in our example of the mean calculation, so I give you four samples from the process, and you compute the mean from those four samples, and then you can use that mean to generate an arbitrary number of samples. Let's say you generate 100 samples. Then you can use those 100 samples to actually estimate the distribution. So as the number of particles become large, we would expect the estimate to converge, and hence particle filtering is regarded as a technique to implement sequential Bayesian estimation. And we approximate continuous distributions using this weighted sum of weighted particles. I'll just skip that. So if the minimum mean squared error estimate can be determined by averaging xi of t. So we can take the integral of x of t times the probability of x of t given y of t dx. And that can be written as that can be approximated essentially by our estimate of this posterior. And that posterior can be written in terms of a sum of our weights times these delta functions. So we can write this as 1 over n times the sum of, we have x of t times the weights times the delta functions. And that then can be simply written as 1 over the sum of the weights times the x's. The MAP estimate is found by maximizing the posterior across each time step. So if we maximize this posterior, then we can, that's a MAP estimate. And the re-estimation equations for the weights then are defined in terms of our expressions for the output function and the system function. So we have xi, we draw essentially random samples from q, which you can think of as our estimate of the underlying process. We then estimate the weights based on the previous weights times this expression, which we talked about as being essentially a Bayesian expression. We have C of Y of T given X of I times this A times X of XI of T given XI of T minus 1. So this is the system stepping from internal state to the next internal state over time. This is the output distribution, and this is the evidence. And then we normalize these weights by the sum of the total weights. And then our estimate of the posterior is done in terms of these weights. So this is essentially what a Bayesian particle filter is. There are a couple of things we haven't discussed yet, which is how you actually get these estimates of A and C. But But in a general sense, this is what a particle filter is. So this is another graphic that sort of explains that in terms of starting with data, getting an estimate of the distribution, using that distribution to generate more data, and then using that data to estimate the posterior at for the next step. And I just wanted to sort of give you some perspective on this. So this is a table which attempts to sort of trace the progression of estimation algorithms over time. And that's, I think, if there's one thing you take away from the lecture today, it's actually this slide, because it just shows you that we began in the, you know, early on with mean squared error type approaches and linear filters and things like that. We moved then to things like Markov processes, but now we've moved to things like Bayesian estimates, and now we're moving beyond that into these Monte Carlo type Bayesian estimates. So as you, as of like a couple years ago, you know, particle filters were very hot, and you would see everybody talking about Bayesian particle filters. What we'll talk about next class is actually a topic that's sort of even newer than particle filters, but the particle filters started to emerge in the mid-90s, and they really became popular in like the early 2000s, and it usually takes these days about 10 years, it seems, from when an algorithm emerges to when it becomes a piece of standard technology. We have actually implemented particle filters here in Mississippi State for some speech recognition applications, and we actually didn't see a lot of difference in performance. So we kind of tried them. They didn't work too well and dropped them. But I just wanted to give you a lecture on them today, just so you, at least when someone says particle filter, you say, oh, I know what those are. I sort of know what those are. And you can go back and dig and learn more about it. Okay, that's it. So I'll see you on, what is today, Wednesday, Friday.